So that's our second theme, is the power of words. The third theme is that words change all the time. English, as a living language, is ever changing. The human mind is a creative one. And with that creativity, we change the language. You just can't stop us from doing it. It's a natural part of language and not in any way a destructive force. Linguists just don't believe that there's erosion in languages or that there's some endpoint or destination and the language is getting better and better to get to that. I recognize the worry about change. And I'm not gonna say that I don't have my pet peeves, because I do. And sometimes I hear things and I think, really? We're gonna use interface for talk? But I recognize that this is just my personal reaction. This is my personal pet peeve. And I know that, for example, at the end of the 19th century, Dean Alford really didn't like the word reliable. And we now look at that and think that's so quaint that he thought there was something wrong with reliable, and someone will think that about me and the word interface. Looking at change in the past, we can learn a lot about our history. And we need to realize or be comfortable with the idea that the changes around us are also much more interesting than worrisome. It may seem like common sense to think about language change as language error. But I'll be framing change much more often as creativity and not as error. This is how linguists think about change compared with, for example, writers of usage guides. And so we will not be using much of the language of error and much more the language of change and creativity. And this relates to the fourth theme of the course, which is that studying English words is going to ask you to rethink some very common notions about language. As speakers of English, we all bring a lot of knowledge to the table. And along with that can come some pretty strong belief systems about how language works, many of which have been learned or reinforced in school, as well as in popular usage guides, perhaps in conversations within your home. We have strong ideas about what's correct and what's incorrect. But I want to raise some questions about that in this course. I mean, who gets to say if a word is a real word? If you and I both know what the word ain't means, why do so many language authorities say that there's something wrong with it? These are important and challenging questions about our everyday experience with words and about the resources we rely on to tell us about words. So as I said, I will be moving away from words like right and wrong to think in more nuanced ways about the competing forces of language change and the benefits of having a standard variety, and the ways that we all negotiate every day choosing different words in different contexts. For example, right now, I sound more like an English professor than I sound when I'm not doing this kind of lecture. Along the way, you're going to learn many wonderful linguistic facts. I often describe myself as a fount of random linguistic information, and I tell my students that every day they will get at least one party trick, one random fact about words that they can use to start conversation. And I remember the time that I had a student sitting in the first row, and I said that on the first day of class, and he raises his hand and he said, "What kind of parties do you go to?" But then by the third or fourth class, he was back saying, "My roommates want to know what we're going to learn today." So we're going to talk about some of these quirky things, like why is the word kernel spelled the way it is? Why does dive have two past tenses, dived and dove? What do we learn from patterns like governor and governess, where governor has stayed a positive term, governess has lowered in status? Why is there a bias in the English language against left-handed people? We would say something like two left feet versus someone's right-hand man. We'll talk about all of these in the lectures to come. For the remainder of this first lecture, I want to talk about the scope of the phrase English words, as it's foundational to what we'll be doing in the course. How big is the English vocabulary? What is encompassed under English words? What counts as a word? And how many are there? Now, I have to be upfront and say, there isn't actually a good answer to the question of exactly how big the English vocabulary is. It depends on who you ask. In Webster's third New International Dictionary, which is the most recent unabridged, there are 450,000 words. They omitted all the words that were obsolete by 1755, except those found in well-known works. Most college dictionaries have somewhere between 50,000 and 180,000 words. But a recent study using Google Books estimated that the English lexicon in the year 2000 was just over 1 million words, compared with just over 500,000 in 1900. So that's pretty explosive growth. Alan Walker Reed, a wonderful linguist, has put the number at 4 million words. And he did his calculation by saying 700,000 in the Merriam-Webster files, 1 million scientific terms, and then you have regional expressions, foreign borrowings, trade names, new slang words we haven't recorded yet. Okay, so that's a lot of words, which raises another important question. How many words does the average speaker know? Well, we can start with this fact. It is many less than any dictionary.